feel lucky to be able to have been an audience member of that roundtable. But I just wanted to say, firstly, good afternoon to everyone. As Steve said, my name's Amanda. I'm based in London at Google. And yeah, I lead apprenticeships globally, actually. They started in Europe at Google, but they're also in India now. They're also in the US. And I also look after some of our other digital skilling programs. But before that, I actually led all of our entry-level hiring for Europe, Middle East, and Africa. So those were the teams that would go out, for instance, and spend their time engaging with entry-level job seekers, with education institutions like colleges and universities, also work with the nonprofits. And we would hire all the apprentices, interns, and also any kind of entry-level job seeker into technical and non-technical roles. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself, and then we'll go into the agenda. So first of all, I just wanted to share that I actually started my career actually teaching. I found this picture of my first school. It's my first primary school I taught in Los Angeles. And after I taught, I actually moved into the education nonprofit world. So I did that for a bit. And then I went to the Los Angeles School District, which is like the local education authority in Los Angeles. It's pretty massive. They educate almost a million children in that education authority. And it's the second largest in the US, just after New York. And then I moved actually to the UK at that point and worked in another nonprofit for about a decade. After that's when I actually moved to Google, and that was about 6 years ago. And the reason I mention that is because I do get a lot of questions. It's not, I suppose, the most typical career journey to be able to start as a teacher, move into the nonprofit and the public sector, and then also to decide sort of 20 years in to go into the corporate world. But the reason I made that choice was really because I felt that I'd spent the first big, you know, chunk, the first 20 years of my career, so focusing on young people, how to help make sure that they had the best chances in life, making sure that we were removing these barriers that existed for them to access top jobs, for instance. And yet I realized that actually, since I had focused so much on the education part of it, I didn't necessarily have that employer lens. I didn't necessarily know what employers looked for when they were actually hiring. And I thought, I kind of wanted to add that piece of the puzzle to my background, and thought, why not go to, you know, one of the best companies in the world, see what they hire for. So that's why I was really, you know, particularly pleased to be able to come spend some time with you all today, because I can share some of that newly gained knowledge with you. So I am going to start talking about the full-time roles and how we hire for those, you know, how we do it, what are the skills we look for. But just to say that, you know, even though this is going to be specific to Google, you can definitely translate this across the global tech sector as well. And I think probably there's lots of things, you know, you could take away from other kind of, you know, particularly corporate roles. But then I will tell you a little bit about how we do apprenticeships and how we modify that for apprenticeship roles, and hopefully have time for Q&A. Okay, so this is our hiring pyramid. I actually heard in the roundtable there's been some discussion around qualifications and degrees. This is definitely a competency-based model versus a credential-based model. And I'm not sure to what extent it's come up before, but the reason for us is because, yeah, credentials are definitely perceived oftentimes as being indicators of success, but actually they're not always. And also we find, I guess, when we think about the competency-based model, we find that that actually speaks more to a candidate's ability to make an impact or to demonstrate proficiency. It's also much more measurable to be looking at competencies versus credentials. So for our full-time roles and really even our intern roles, we look at these four areas that are in this triangle. We look at role-related knowledge, general cognitive ability, leadership, and then googliness. So I'm gonna dive into each of those and let you know a little bit more about what they all mean. But overall, what we would do in our process would be to gather evidence of all of those against the specific role that someone's applying for. We have roles that range from sales to marketing, IT, engineering, and then the level of the role. So entry level, more experienced. They would go through several interviews. And then we have a very unbiased hiring committee. This is something that started at Google, which is that the manager that's hiring the individual and the people that interviewed are not in this committee. So they're just looking in an unbiased way at the evidence to determine whether or not that person's met the hiring bar. So just to go through each one, I'm going to start with what we call GCA. So what we have found, I suppose, is that learning ability is more important than actually the marks, because the marks that you get in an academic setting are not necessarily predictive of your performance after a year or two on the job. So while we do want candidates who are smart, it's not about necessarily the academics. We're looking for students who have challenged themselves. So in some cases, what we might see is that they're taking very difficult courses, but their grades are maybe lower because of that. And the way that we measure GCA is looking at people that can look at all different aspects of a problem. So I'm going to give you an example here. You might be in an interview situation and you'd be asked, you know, okay, so your job to open a new Google office. How would you do it? Now, we're going to listen to how you're thinking that through, how you're talking about the different factors that you're considering. You know, where would you choose? What, you know, what country, what kind of site? What would your approach be? How are you breaking down that problem? Essentially, what are the key aspects that you're considering that are going along that path to get you to your solution? This is actually probably the most difficult part of the interview process, and people do find it really challenging because it's not really intuitive and it's not often something that people are asked to do. A lot of us just kind of jump to the solution and we're asking actually to hear the thought process. So we also realize that we might not get the optimal answer. And in fact, you know, there's not necessarily an answer to these kinds of questions. It's not going to be, you know, you should open the office, you know, in Warsaw, for instance, and it should be in a very urban part of Warsaw. It is very, very much about the process, and that's what counts for so much. So I think another way to think of this is kind of intellectual curiosity. So looking for people who want to invest time and energy into learning more about things, whether that's people, places, concepts, et cetera. The next thing is the leadership. Now, of course, for entry-level roles, this is more about an emergent leadership model than really kind of a formal leadership model. We realize that in a lot of cases at this level, you're not necessarily going to be finding every single person being in an elected leadership role or appointed to something. So oftentimes what you're really looking for is leadership beyond authority. So, you know, yeah, sure, some people are the student union president, some people are, you know, head of a team, but actually we're really looking for the fact that people have the ability to solve problems and flex different leadership skills. So, you know, you might have a situation, for instance, where you're not the most senior person in the room. I mean, I think in an entry-level role, you're almost never the most senior person in the room, but you very well may be the subject matter expert. So what do you do about that? And funny, when I was preparing, I was thinking about my first job teaching in the mid-90s and kind of casting your mind back in terms of technology. I was actually one of the people on my campus who knew the most about computers because I just come from university. Now, I was asked to actually run the after-school computer club. And then I kind of by default sort of became like the person that then talked about how we should train the faculty in computer skills. And so I was sort of put in this leadership position a couple of months in, but I didn't really have any authority. And so I do think finding individuals who are able to think about how to do that and have demonstrated some of that is really important. Now, I can't say if I did that particularly well or not, but I can say that when you're in an entry-level role, it's not uncommon that you are asked to demonstrate leadership even without that authority. So again, one way to think about this is the kind of collaboration and teamwork that I know all of you educators are definitely thinking about when you think about these really critical skills that young people need. And then role-related knowledge. Again, a little bit of a difficult one at entry level. This is actually what sat in the middle of that triangle I was showing you. It's essentially all the attributes that show that you have experience in the role that you're being hired into, which, you know, at a more experienced level is pretty common, but at an entry level isn't so common. So again, at this entry level, we would be looking for things like curiosity, the ability to reason, you know, ways that you can identify that people can build their knowledge quite quickly. And, but as I mentioned earlier, since we're looking at level, for instance, when we're hiring, it might not be the part that we're gonna weight as much at an entry level. And then lastly, googliness. I mean, what does it even mean? this is quite hard to assess as well, because it's not something that you're kind of necessarily taught when you go through sort of interview training or when, you know, when you're growing up. It's not like, I don't know, be kind, be honest, be googly, but it does underpin our culture. And so I wanted to just kind of pull back the curtain a bit and tell you what we mean by that. It definitely drives the way that we work. We feel like we need to be comfortable pushing boundaries. We have to have people that ask big questions. Definitely can't have people that are afraid to fail. You know, the technology sector is one where you oftentimes need to fail in order to get to the right solution. So you need to be able to do that to make the best products. So when we're asking questions to assess this, we're looking for things like, do they thrive in ambiguity? Do they value feedback? Mentioned earlier, do they challenge the status quo? So those are some of the things that we would be looking for and assessing in that. Now, I just wanted to take a quick step back and say that I actually mentioned a lot of things. And the reason I say that is, you know, obviously a lot of educators probably watching this, and that's a lot of things. I mean, these are just some of the things that I mentioned in the slides I just went through. So I actually didn't even put the googliness ones on here. I just put the ones for general cognitive ability and leadership. But, you know, some of the ones I mentioned, for instance, with googliness are some of these things as well. So as I said, just taking a step back to say, yeah, this is definitely a lot of things that we're looking for. And essentially, I think looking for people though that seek a challenge, like to solve problems, and want to work together, and do that in kind of in concert with those people around them. So before I move into the apprenticeship work, I did just want to say one other quick thing, which is a feature of our hiring process, which is what we call kind of culture add versus culture fit. And what that's all about is that when we're hiring, we're really looking for candidates that can help add what might be missing in our team or in the organization. And this is really because we very much value diversity of thought. We know that when people are bringing in different opinions and come from different backgrounds, we really know that that is going to make the team stronger and more effective. And that also will make our products more stronger and more effective. And it's kind of a perfect thing to mention before I jump into apprenticeships, because apprenticeships are, I find, absolutely brilliant at this. They are usually individuals on a team who are coming from, you know, a different background, a different bit of experience than a lot of other people. And so we just find that in particular, apprentices are very, very valued for being able to bring a new way of thinking to teams. So when we look to hire apprentices into Google, we have to be super thoughtful about it. You know, before I even get into that, I just wanted to say a thing or two about the kind of time that we're all living through in terms of kind of these job training programs, these on-the-job training programs. You know, obviously, most of us are working from home, especially in companies. A lot of companies haven't gone back. And I really, really think that as much as companies are able, they need to continue to invest in these programs, particularly with what we're seeing with youth unemployment and economic turmoil. It's pretty hard. And I think a lot of companies are asking themselves, you know, what kind of experience can they give apprentices? How can they make sure that this is really meaningful and meeting the standards? But, you know, the impetus needs to be on the companies to figure that out. And I just want to also say so many companies have done that and have continued to figure out how to rise up to the challenges. So even though it has been hard, I'm glad to see so many people are continuing with these programs. And in the Q&A, if anyone's interested in just how we're seeing virtual apprenticeships play out, I'm, you know, more than happy to address that. But first, I thought you might be interested in just in general what we do in terms of apprenticeships in the UK. So we actually launched our program in 2017. And the first one we did was in software engineering. And it was important to me then when we launched it. And it's also, you know, continues to be very important to me now that we're training apprentices in our core business. So these are the fields that, you know, have the most growth potential and that puts the apprentices at the center of what we're doing. So when we actually started to think about what tracks or professions we wanted to train beyond that, we actually moved into areas like digital marketing and IT, because those are also areas which are very core to our business. And as you can see there, you know, we started pretty small with 6 just to make sure that we could provide the right opportunities and experiences. But now we hire close to about 50 a year. And the programs are typically kind of 15 months to 24 months based in London, which is where our offices are. And we open up the applications in the autumn, usually for the following autumn. So we just ask people to kind of monitor the site, careers.google.com, if you want to see when the applications are opening. Now, I want to talk before I kind of get into how we selected that the outreach, because I didn't really talk about this so much with hiring for full-time roles. And that's because when we're hiring entry-level positions outside of apprenticeships, we're actually in a more straightforward position. We're primarily hiring from campuses. We know where they are, and we have tried and tested ways of engaging with them. So we might be going to the career services, we might be going to information sessions, but apprentice candidates could be anywhere. So we also know that beyond that, apprenticeship people applying for apprentices maybe are applying for an office-based job for the first time, and they may not have the same kind of knowledge that other candidates might have. They might not know, for instance, that a lot of times when companies hire, they hire on a rolling basis. So you should get your application in early, as opposed to, you know, waiting 2 or 3 weeks to apply. So we really need to make sure that we're setting up our processes for equity, for accessibility and transparency, even more than we do in our standard processes. So you can see on there some of the things I mean by that. So for instance, we partner with nonprofits and educational institutions quite closely to identify great sources of talent. We invest a lot in an online presence. So these are sites that we know people are engaging with when they're looking for apprenticeships. And then we have some modifications to our full-time outreach role. So for instance, I mentioned this closing date. We have a clear closing date versus doing rolling recruitment. We have online FAQs, which we wouldn't have for every single role at the company, for instance, but for these we do. And then if someone asks a question, we also auto respond with some further ones. And then one of the things that I really like the best is the fact that we do send email blasts to people that have started an application. And the reason I think this is important is a couple of reasons. One, because sometimes you send an application or you start an application, you have no idea if it's even been received. But we want people to know, you know, we see you started an application, let us know if you've got any questions. And then we can also, again, reflag that FAQ, tell them about online info sessions we're having. So we try to sort of support the process a lot more than we would for our full-time roles. And then just to pretty much wrap things up, how we actually select them. So, you know, similar to having a bespoke outreach model, the selection model as well is also adapted a bit to the full-time role, really to acknowledge the different skill and experience levels that the apprentices are coming to us with. We still do focus on those four things, the general cognitive ability, the role-related knowledge, the googliness, and the leadership. But each track would have its own kind of specific selection model that aligns to the professional skills. We'd be focusing a lot more on the transferable skills, maybe, making sure that we're seeing the signals that this is going to be the right kind of program for the candidate with the additional learning that goes along with it. Of course, looking for passion for the field, and we'd look for that through things like any kind of self-taught stuff gives us good signals for that. So, you know, have they gone to hackathons or boot camps? Sometimes people actually start small businesses in areas like in digital marketing and social media. That's obviously good evidence of passion. And then in terms of building out the rest of it, we work with our internal subject matter experts and also the external training providers that we work with to figure out exactly what the skill set is that the apprentice is going to need to be successful. And then, of course, we work with our hiring teams. So it's not so different, but again, it's meant to be able to accommodate and adapt to the fact that the apprentice candidates themselves are a bit different, and also the roles that they're applying for. They're going to have a lot less experience in this sort of really, really, truly entry-level role than maybe some of our roles that are more geared towards people that have a bit of experience. So that's it for me. I hope it was useful. I know it was quite quick, canter through all that stuff. I hope it helps you understand that a bit more. And as I said, I'm happy now to take any questions.